G'day everyone, welcome to A Tune Under Podcast, the United Series, Episode 3, and what a guest we have tonight. What, on the surface, probably looked like a really crazy decision to leave university to become a full-time YouTuber. Fast forward 2 years with over 50,000 subscribers, he's absolutely destroying YouTube. It's Adam Pearson. Adam, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Not too bad. It's good to see both of you. And I'm looking forward, obviously, we'll talk about it in a bit, but the fact that Newcastle are, of course, going to Australia, I mean, less than 2 weeks now. I can't believe I'm saying that. It's came out
quickly,
but I'm massively buzzing for that. I can't really get over there. But
absolutely.
I'm start off by, obviously, thank you both for asking me to come on. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it's a good opportunity now to just have a good chat about the club, enjoy ourselves, because, I mean, over the last few weeks or so, things have been much better on the pitch as well. So it's a good point of the season now. We just need to see out his last couple of games and make sure we get some form of European football going into that trip to Australia. But now I'm absolutely stoked to be here. So thank you so much for asking me to come on.
Absolutely stoked to have you, mate. So, like you said, 2 weeks to go. Have you got everything sorted? Your passports are up to date. Everything's ready to go.
Yes, my passport is up to date, thank you. I've got the visa sorted, obviously I've got the flight sorted. So that was the most important part first, because due to the fact of how strict the time frame is, I'm going to Brentford away last game of the season. So afterwards, my flight, I think it's like 5 hours after the game or something. And by the time I get to Australia, I only get that one day before the first game, which is just such a mental time frame. So you've got such a strict period when you actually got to go there. Yeah. And for me, I always want to be there at least a day before the game in case there's any events on, just a chance to settle in and just to make sure if something goes wrong, we can handle it, we can get there in time for the game. So that was quite important for me. Not cheap, not going to lie, it cost an absolute bloody fortune.
Oh, no, it's dearest poison, mate.
Now, the good part is actually, though, the Heathrow Airport is like quite literally next to Brentford, so it's easy to get there after the game. And luckily for us, we do have an away game in the final game of the season, so it's quite easy actually to get to the plane at least. But it's going to be a long way there. I know I've been on the flight, that's 22 hours before, so I'm definitely going to feel that one. Hopefully, I'll be all rested up and sorted for the games, because that one is going to hit quite hard. But now I've got everything sorted for now. I do need to book the hotels actually, but other than that, I've got everything sorted.
Yeah, that's the least of your problems, mate. You'll find a bed somewhere, trust me. So, what do you actually know about Australia? Like, it's on the other side of the world. And I thought hopefully one day, like, we've had Manchester United here and Liverpool and Tottenham have been a couple of times now and stuff like that. I think we've had Juventus and AC Milan. We've had Juventus before, definitely. AC Milan are coming out as well. I didn't envision Newcastle coming here, at least not this soon. So for someone like you said, short preparation. Well, we only probably found out about this maybe a month or so ago. Like, it's all happened really quickly. What do you know about Australia?
No, I can't lie. My geography's not the best, I would say, in the UK. And it's not just Australia as well. Of course, in the summer, I had a chance to go across the map. And if you were to tell me straight away, Adam, can you point to New York, Philadelphia, Atlanta on the map? I would not get anywhere close again. Like, my geography's just terrible in terms of different continents. I just don't look into it too much, but the only thing I know about Australia really is probably all the animals in Australia that could probably kill you, to be honest. So that's the only thing. That's the only thing I think about when someone mentioned Australia to me. But honestly, I've never been there before. I can't lie. I don't know much about Australia. So it's one of the beauties that I like about actually traveling with Newcastle, because places like Saudi Arabia, of course, areas of America I've just explained, there are places that you're probably not going to go to on your own, to be honest. You kind of had an opportunity there. Of course, Newcastle might even go to Japan for the pre-season. So just stuff like that. Places that you just won't tend to go to, but because Newcastle is going there, it gives you an excuse to go. And it's that sort of thing where it helps you learn about places. Like with Australia, I know quite a lot about Melbourne. By the time I go out, I know a lot more about Australia itself and what Newcastle means to so many people out there. Of course, Australia is also a destination where a lot of people in the UK will tend to go and live. So Newcastle must have a real good core fan base there. And it's quite important for the club to be able to utilise that and get the most out of it, which is probably one of the main reasons why they have decided to go there right at the end of the season when they got the opportunity to do so. It's a great opportunity for them to just to build their brand up and just to give back to the supporters that are out there. So huge opportunity to do so. But in terms of what I know about Australia, I'm not going to lie, I don't know too much.
Yeah, no, I think what you do know is enough. Just assume every animal will kill you. So just live like that, mate.
I just want to ask Adam, how did you feel when Newcastle arranged these friendlies? Because obviously you knew you had to come. So it was like, what did you do? Ring your bank straight away and say, right, I've got to go to Melbourne in a couple of months.
No, well, that's definitely something I had to explain when it comes to paying taxes. I'll explain straight away, oh, I had to go out to Australia and do this for a couple of weeks. But that'll be an issue that we sort when we get there. But now, my first initial thoughts, I should say, when the pre-season fixtures got, end of season fixtures got announced, I'm not used to saying that, is that it was a bit of a surprise, actually, because it's not something that Newcastle has ever tended to do, the book some at the end of the season. Now, of course, you've got to look in the club's mindset. You even see like Eddie Howe come out in the press conference and go, well, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have booked these fixtures to be an end-of-season tour. The fact is, for the turnover, like I said before, the players would get there one day for the first match, to play twice in the span of 5 days and to go back home. It's a five-day trip for them. It's such a short period where, with the Copa America on, with the Euros on, within a month or so after that, you're kind of wondering, well, why aren't Newcastle doing this? And obviously, revenue is going to be something in there. Newcastle and the FFP need money to come into the football club in order to reinvest into the team. So there definitely will be that sense in the way. But for me, it's just more of a business opportunity, whether that's sponsorships, whether that's just a chance where the club can build new connections out in Australia and just to build the fan base up even more. It would have been an opportunity that was too good to turn down for him, hence why I'd have accepted this trip. So as much as I'm looking forward to it, I know you would be all looking forward to it as well. Obviously, it's a trip that, in the grand scheme of things, probably shouldn't be happening, in all honesty, at least not now. Probably should be a pre-season tour for us to do, because it's just a lot for the players. And I'm hoping to God we've got European football, because the last thing I want to do is to see the players go across there after failing to get European football.
Yeah.
Quite deflating for them. It would just not be ideal. So we've got to make sure we get that done. And I feel like once we get that done, the Austria trust is going to be a great holiday. We've got a good chance to enjoy ourselves, of course, for the players. As much as I don't want to say that they've got to go out there and give 100%, they've got to make sure that the fans get treated well. And it's just an opportunity for them to have a couple of extra games, even though, in all honesty, they are quite unnecessary for them.
Yeah, they're absolutely unnecessary. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. As excited as we were, we all were, all us fans here in Australia, the actual decision of it's a bit mind-boggling. And like you said, I think it should have been probably a pre-season tour rather than an end-of-season tour. But it is what it is. They're coming now, so we can't do anything about it. Let's go back to the start, Adam. So you're at university. Why did you decide to quit university and sort of take up YouTube full-time? And how long were you bouncing around that for in your brain just before pulling the trigger going, no, this is what I want to do?
Well, there were quite a few different factors I went into it. Now, first off, just in regards to my university course, basically I was on a three-year course. So after I completed the first 2 years, basically you have something that's called like a half a degree. So you get your 2 years done, and then this third year, you're allowed to do it whenever you want. So straight away, when I left uni, it was never a case that I just threw 3 years away and that's all gone. I can never go back and do it. Like that third year was always there. So if I wanted to go back to university, if I wanted to finish my sports coaching degree, like the year's always there. So even if it's a case where I decided to go back in 20 years' time, like, it's always going to be there. So it's never like a case that I've just threw everything away. And in terms of me, guess how long I had this kind of feeling for that I wanted to try and go full-time YouTube. It was kind of floating around my mouth for a while, actually. So for me, I've been on YouTube for quite a while now. I don't know what it was, but around the time before COVID hit, I kind of started to fall out a little bit of it. It was just a case where I would only post videos when I went in the way to, or maybe an occasional home vlog, but it was never a case that I was actually had my mind in YouTube content. It was just like during the week, I wouldn't do anything on YouTube. It kind of just be like a weekend thing. So when COVID hit, it was a kind of reset time. I had an excuse now where you're stuck in the house, you've got to do something to keep yourself active. And just YouTube, I started to get back into it, started to make me think a little bit. And then eventually, when the time come when we were out of COVID, Newcastle were playing again in front of fans, it was just, I started thinking at that point, well, you know what, life's too short, you're never guaranteed anything if an opportunity comes around, and I should give this a go, and I should see what happens. So I started to float around at the end of lockdown, and then eventually, obviously I wasn't too pleased with uni anyway, so I started to fall out with uni a little bit, and then on top of that, the takeover just happened just out of nowhere. And I thought that was the excuse that you needed straight away, because everyone's going to have their eyes on Newcastle. that was one of my concerns before the takeover about potentially doing Newcastle full time because of the fact that we're crap. Who's going to watch us? Who's going to be interested? You can't really dedicate a YouTube channel and expect to have a full time wage off your team being rubbish. It's not sustainable. So once Newcastle had that takeover, it's just the excuse there. Well, straight away it just went off my head. Well, you know what? This has happened now. If you don't go full time now, when do you go full time? So straight away, quite literally the night of the takeover, I was drunk, by the way. I was all over the place, but basically, yeah. massive 10 paragraph to the university. That's it. Thank you for everything. I've had enough. I want to do something else now. And that was it. I started going full time from that. So now at the time, it wasn't really a case that I was someone that I went, well, you know what? Full-time YouTube, that's it. I'm never going to do anything else. It's more of a case that, you know, I go full-time now. We'll give it a year or two. We'll see how things are. And obviously, we can decide in a couple of years whether that's something that we can't go down or whether that's something where I should potentially do something else and then come back to it. So that was just more of a chance for me just to throw it at the wall, see what happens. And yeah, I've been quite happy with things, how things have went so far. It's been good. I've been pleased. And obviously, it's a good opportunity now to get ourselves abroad now. I think for me, that's probably one of the most rewarding things about YouTube, actually, is a chance to go to places like Australia. It kind of hits you when you're there. You're like, whoa, I never thought I'd be somewhere like here. So that's always quite a nice feeling. I can't wait to get down there and just to have a chance to speak to everyone. It's always quite a nice feeling for me personally.
It's hard work, isn't it, YouTube? YouTube's hard work, isn't it? Because we've obviously got the channel and we do like audio podcasts and YouTube as well, but we constantly have debates, and there's seven of us and questions about what we're doing, and then you do well on YouTube and then the next video you get like hardly any views, and it's like, for you, it's hard work, isn't it? Like, that it's a real commitment, and it's actually not easy to just start doing videos and, you know, get good content and then get yourself known. It's so you've actually done really well to manage to sort of get into that market, I think, and you've, yeah, it's not easy, is it?
No, it's not. It is quite a lot of work, YouTube. I think people mainly assume that once you record a video, go straight up to YouTube. That's just not how it works. Obviously, you've got to spend a decent amount of time actually editing the video, whether you're going to get B-rolling, for example, overlays. You've got to sort all that out. Then on top of that, you've got to sort out your thumbnails. You've got to sort out your titles. Obviously, for example, this live stream here, you imagine you have to sort out the background. You've got to obviously find a time that suits everyone, because the fact that I'm in the UK, you're both in Australia, you have to find a time that suits everyone as well. You have to look at all sorts of different things there. It is quite a lot of hard work. I know you guys know how hard it is. It is tough. And I think for anyone watching now, you're quite naive, to be honest, if you think YouTube is as easy as uploading the video. It's not that easy. It's quite rewarding. It takes a lot of, I think, a lot of trial and error, I would argue. I think it's something you probably have to learn by yourself. I never like to give out advice to people. For example, I feel like you have to learn YouTube on your own, because that's how you get the best out of learning. You make mistakes by yourself, and that's how you correct yourself. So I never tend to give out advice or anything like that, but it is hard. It's definitely something that you can't just learn overnight. You've got to get used to it. You've got to enjoy what you're doing now. I know for you guys as well, but for example, when I made my videos about 10 years ago now, I went back and looked at some of those videos. I would not dare.
You'd be absolutely cringe. Yeah. So you obviously follow the first team around as well, and you go to all the women's games when they don't clash with the men's team, and the academy games and stuff as well. In regards to the first team and the men's first team, when was the last game you actually missed?
Ooh, it was before COVID, so it would have been about 4 or 5 years ago now. I think it was the Southampton game where St. Maximin scored 1-1-0. Basically, I was at college at the time. I just couldn't afford to go, essentially. So
yeah,
that wasn't that one, but
crazy.
That was the last one I missed, and that was I think about 4 years ago now.
Yeah, that's absolutely mental. So, you don't have another job, do you? This is it. This is, like, your YouTube sort of funds all the other trips to pay for your away days and everything like that.
Yeah, has been doing that, yeah.
Yeah.
I do all YouTube now. I've started going a little bit on TikTok and Twitch as well, so eventually those two will also generate revenue, essentially. But
yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's all social media, to answer your question.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you're obviously a season ticket holder, and you've been going to games for probably as long as you can remember, and then even before this whole YouTube started, you probably were going to the games and stuff like that. Do you have a favorite game or a favorite memory?
Ooh, Well, believe it or not, I don't think it's a surprise, but most of my favourite memories have to be after the takeover amount we've had in the space of 2 years in Jersey. Best game I've ever been to straight away has to be the PSG Champions League game this season. I mean, actually ridiculous how good we're in that game. Completely caught me off guard. I guess before the takeover, there's a few that stick out. I've been a season ticket holder now for 14 years, so I've had a chance to see Newcastle. I mean, at its best on the mic, actually, in terms of actually getting European football, and at its worst, of course, getting relegated back in 2016. So I've seen some good and I've seen some bad, but probably the best I've seen before the takeover probably was the first season I went to actually under Pardew. So it was the 2011-12 season where we finished fifth that year. Got a huge win over Man U at home, won 3-0 against them, just battered a good Alex Ferguson side. So that was probably the best home game I remember before the takeover. But honestly, the amount of memories that I've had since the takeover now, I barely even remember any of my memories. It's just all been so quick. Of course, this season alone, we beat Sunderland in the derby. We've had so many good memories where a lot of stuff where you look back the next 5-10 years, you went, oh, you know what, that was some of my best time.
And it's kind of
ones, to be honest.
It is weird because, like, this season obviously hasn't been fantastic and we've had a lot of sort of down, and it feels like it's just been one kick after another, one injury after another and things like that. But I think if we can get European sort of football next year, we're going to look back on this year. There's so much good stuff that happened this year and stuff that'll be remembered for the rest of our lives in a season where most people have been pretty flat about the whole situation with the injuries for like 5 or 6 months. So yeah, it's crazy when you think like that. But like when you were saying you're a season's ticket holder for 14 years, Jack, you wanted to talk about some ticketing, didn't you?
Yeah, I was just interested in... Sorry, I was just interested, Adam, in what you think about the way that the club have sort of managed the ticketing situation since the takeover. Because obviously there's such massive, massive demand and there's talk of having a, you know, we need a new stadium or we need a bigger stadium. Everyone agrees on that. But there's been some problems with the way tickets, like... I don't want you to sit here and slag the club off or anything, you know, everything they've done. But I'm just interested as someone who goes to all of the games, how you think that they've managed that? Because it seems like they've struggled with that a little bit more than other areas post-takeover.
Ooh, well, I'll talk about your away tickets first. So just give me a bit of context towards myself. So basically, I'm someone that's actually benefited more this season since the changes have been made because of the fact that people can no longer resell tickets. It means that naturally the points decrease quite a lot. So it just basically means that I can go almost every game. So it just benefited me a lot more this season than it did last season because of how high the points are out on. So so the changes this season essentially is that that people, especially away tickets, you now get searched at games. So some tickets will purposely go off in the turnstile. So if your ticket goes off, you don't get any heads up about it. You have to go to the box office and show ID just to prove that it's you, basically. So that's a change that's been made this season. And it's always tricky, especially away games, because most of the time you've got a capacity of about 3,000 people and it's going to be about 15, 20,000 people that want to go to a game. So that's a problem Newcastle have. You can't please everyone. It doesn't matter what system you do for the away matches, you just can't please everyone. And I feel like for the away games especially, it probably is as fair as it can get. I know obviously some people would have exploited the system in the past and they would have had those loyalty points because of that, but I don't see how else the club could handle away tickets. It's tricky. Obviously, home tickets are a bit of a different story because of all the commercial and all of the hospitality tickets that are now sell. In fact, they've got a brand new hospitality package that's quite literally designed for international fans. It's purposely made for international fans. It's £800 a game. Nobody in Newcastle in their right mind is paying that for a match. It's purposely designed so anyone, for example, from Australia, from America, from Saudi Arabia, Newcastle United knows that these people have travelled from across the world to come watch a game. And the only legit way they can buy a ticket and 100% have that ticket is through this hospitality package that costs an absolute fortune. So they know that people are going to be desperate and they know straight away that people, if they're willing to make that trip already, they're going to pay that money to go see the game, even if it is the most expensive package that they've got. So Newcastle is it obviously not ideal doing that, but every Premier League team does it. It's because of how the Premier League is now. FFP teams are now forced to just overcharge fans is put on loads of hospitality packages. I mean, even next season, anyone who cancels right now that does not renew their season ticket, that doesn't even go into a new season ticket. Quite literally now goes into a brand new seat or a brand new hospitality seat. It's designed just to make more money for Newcastle. So it's not ideal. obviously, I can imagine for international fans, it'd be quite frustrating. You want to go across to Newcastle. Obviously, you got to book flights, your hotels, everything months in advance, but you don't have the guarantee of actually getting a ticket. So, obviously, I know that'd be frustrating for you guys. And if I was in your position, I'd probably be discussing it differently. I'd probably have my own opinions on it. But for me now, obviously, I'm a season ticket holder. I go to the away matches. So, it's something that benefits me personally, but I do get the frustration. I do get why all people will be quite upset about it.
And what do you reckon about the stadium question? Because there's some people who think we need a 75, 80,000 stadium built in Leeds's Park. Other people think we need to stay at St. James's Park. But what you've just said there is absolutely bang on about we need corporate money coming in. So look at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, NFL games. They have huge corporate packages. They've obviously got the London aspect, so they get a bit more that way. But what do you think is this kind of sweet spot for the stadium? And what do you hope happens with St. James's Park or a new stadium option?
Well, I'll probably start off the capacity amount, actually, because I have seen quite a lot of people say that. You know, they think the stadium should be 75 to 80,000 seater, which is a court would actually be the biggest in the Premier League. For me, I don't think that's realistic or feasible, to be honest. But you've got to look at all the teams in the Premier League. Manchester United is an obvious example. Obviously, they have a 78,000 seater stadium. I know they've been crap for a couple of years now, but they're basically all the biggest English team in the world. They've got so many fans abroad. And they don't sell out. So if they don't sell out at that stadium, I know Newcastle have been doing well. They've had a great form. But I think especially when you have a stadium expansion, you look at potentially building a new stadium, you've got to look long term. You've got to look 10, 15 years. I don't realistically think Newcastle probably would have 75 to 80,000 people that would go every single week in that time. Unless we quite literally were the biggest team in England, which you're not guaranteed anything, especially with a team like Manchester City in the league. So realistically, I think we should have around probably about 65,000 seats. I think we probably could get an extra 10 to 15,000 in every game. But I don't think it's anywhere we're getting an extra 30,000 in every single week. I just don't think it's feasible. So straight away, I think if Newcastle were potentially going to build a stadium that big, you've got to run the risk of potentially not selling out every game, because I just don't think we would. As for what do I think is going to happen, or what do I think about Newcastle relocating the stadium there, I personally want us to stay. I would hate the feeling of just knowing that the old St. James's Park get turned into uni accommodation. I know a lot of people don't necessarily mind that. They just want the best for the club. They just want to make money. They just want to make sure the club's as best as it can be. But I go to these modern stadiums. I go to Tottenham away. I go to West Ham away. I do quite like Tottenham. But honestly, one, the teams tend to struggle whenever they do move. They always seem to have a bit of a couple of off seasons when they first move around. And secondly, I just think some of them are so lifeless. That new Everton Stadium, obviously, it's not been built yet, but I just get the sense straight away it's going to be so lifeless compared to the old Goodison Park. It looks such a generic stadium. Looks like such a modern stadium, yes, but it just looks like a stadium you've seen 100 times already. It's just, I don't know, it's something about St. James's Park. It's right in the city centre. It's the cathedral on the hill, as Darren Hughes would say. But no, it's a massive stadium for us. It's quite a unique stadium. And it's something that I don't want to see go away, to be honest. I think we do definitely have to expand it. Ideally, if we can find a way of doing that, if we can get it up to maybe just over 60,000 for now, I think that will work for us. But it's a nightmare just due to where it is, due to everything that's around the stadium. It's just such a hard ground to actually expand on. So once the club figures out that problem, we'll get to potentially expand it. But personally, for me, I would like to see us do that. I think it's feasible, hard, but feasible and expensive as well. But I think the club will do it. And you just got to see what happens next. But personally, for me, I would like us to stay. And I think we probably should get around 65,000. I think if you're going over that, we might be putting ourselves in a bit of an issue.
Yeah, nice. So, like you said, you do go to all the away days. Do you have a favourite away day that you look at the fixture each year and go, yeah, I can't wait to go back there?
Yeah, there are quite a few ones. I mean, I know they went down 20th now, but Sheffield United's always an easy, good away game because, one, you're always winning there, and two, it's like the away ground. It's right next to the train station. It takes, about like, an hour 40 to get there in the train. Like, that is so short for Newcastle fans. So I like that one straight away. Arsenal is probably the one out of the big six that I like the most. I don't know what it is about the Emirates. I just go there, and I always enjoy the stadium, even though we get battered every time we go there. We never, ever do well at the Emirates, but it's always a stadium I quite like. One's like Man U away because of the feeling. It's almost like a derby feeling. It's like a team that you hate so much. So just that going into the game, it's always one of the best away atmospheres. You always go there and you just want to beat Man U. And normally in the past, I would hate it because we lose all the time, but we're much better now. And it's a team that I don't think we're scared of anymore. I think we all know now that Man U's just not the team that once were in Newcastle. Now we're just a team that I would say are better than them. I think despite them being around the same area as us in the team, I think statistically we have got a better team than them. So it's about going down there and just winning next week. And that's something that we should be trying to do now. And I always tend to like Man U away for that reason. I think it's a good ground and it's somewhere where we're Newcastle fans. But we hate them so much, it just makes it feel like an even bigger match than it is. Yes. So probably those three, how to pinpoint them straight away.
Yeah, nice. So now you're you probably are a celebrity. Like, let's be honest. Like, if you've got over 50,000 subscribers on YouTube, you're obviously doing something right. So when you do go out, you do get noticed and things like that. Have you ever felt, like, unsafe or uncomfortable when you've kind of been out on your own and things like that, travelling to games and stuff?
I wouldn't necessarily say so, travelling to games. Now, there's probably two scenarios where I basically wouldn't want to get spotted. So the first one, obviously privacy. Let's say I'm out with a girl, for example, and I'm having to meet with her. Like, obviously, I would not want it when I'm out on a date, for example. So stuff like that, obviously, you know yourself, but it's an awkward time. You wouldn't want to get like someone walking up to you and speaking to you in quite an awkward time like that. So that's probably one. But now, secondly, Newcastle fans always sound that, I think, especially on social media, you got to know straight away that social media is not real life. You won't get abuse that you do in social media in person. It just doesn't happen. I guess my worst time, I would say, when Newcastle fans is when people are drinking quite a lot. Because when you get people that are heavily intoxicated or they're doing God knows what, obviously they get quite confident in their minds. So they come up and they start to be a bit of an arse and start to do things that are quite annoying. But that's probably the worst, when it's a group of people and they're being quite heavily intoxicated. That's when people will try and do something. That's not just with me, it's with our content creators as well. But you will always get that person whenever you go to a game. I know you guys probably know that yourselves at some point in your life, but you always get that one person that will try and spoil off everyone else. So that's something that I feel like on YouTube you do have to understand. But it mostly is fine. Even if someone dislikes you, for example, when they see you in person, they won't tend to do anything. It's just that one occasion where if someone does drink quite a lot, that's where you wouldn't tend to get like that. But to answer the question, do I feel unsafe? No, not really. No, I always feel like even if someone was going to be a bit antagonistic, I don't ever feel like I'm a bit unsafe from it. I always feel fine about it. But I can imagine for someone else, might feel differently about that. So it does depend on who you are as well.
Yeah, that's good. That kind of makes me feel good.
How do you manage the social media side? Because like you said, social media is just full of people who'll just say anything because it's behind the keyboard and they think they can say whatever they want. You obviously cop quite a lot of shit from people sometimes. And, I suppose to an extent, you know what you're stepping into when you get into that area. But it still mustn't be very nice, though, like when people are saying stuff. And how do you sort of stop yourself from biting back on everything as well? Because you just sort of ignore a lot of it and get on with it.
Well, obviously, in an ideal world, you were like if you didn't get any abuse, but I think everyone gets abuse on social media, so that's something you have to understand straight away. It's not necessarily, I guess, a bit of a personal digger. Everyone will get abuse of people. That's just what happens. Everyone will get it. As for how I deal with it, straight away, just block. If it's someone like YouTube, just delete the comment. You can hide the comments so that person can't actually comment again in the new video. Stuff like TikTok, Twitter, just block straight away. Now, I think the worst thing you probably can do is to react to it now. Some occasions, for example, obviously if it's quite a bad comment, and maybe you might want to potentially take something further with it. But for most comments, if you react to them, you kind of give them more ammunition to send you more abuse or don't encourage other people to do it. So for me, just block straight away. I don't pay any attention to it. I don't react to it. I don't respond to it. And that's personally, I would say, the best approach to take to it. You've got to get it regardless. It doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what background you're from, you will always get abuse. So it's just someone that you do have to understand when you're on social media. And as I said before, I would say it again because I feel like it is quite important, but social media is not real life. You just will not get this in person. So just bear that in mind and you'll be fine now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good advice for everyone. So you've done hundreds of videos on YouTube. Do you have a favorite one?
That's an interesting question, actually. I wouldn't say there's one that kind of comes to the top of my head straight away. Probably, I would look back at the video now and say when I was most happy with it. Probably announcement when I went full-time YouTube, like actually recording that video and knowing that I was going to make that announcement there.
That was it.
Yeah, it just felt real. That made any sense. It just kind of felt like, well, this is actually going to happen now and I'm going to do it. So that one always sticks out in my mind. But just favorite games that you've been to, really opportunities you have with Newcastle, stuff like that, where you get an opportunity to do something. For example, again, for that PSG game, one was the best game I've been to in my lifetime, and two, a TNT asked them to come and do media work for, obviously, their channel for the game. So straight away, getting a hospitality ticket to go in there. It was just to see all the Champions League printing and logos everywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's just stuff like that when you look back where your experiences that you had and your favourite games and just your favourite things that you've done. So probably those ones. I do tend to quite like my pre-season videos as well whenever you do go abroad, of course, which we'll touch on shortly. But yeah, whenever you do go abroad again, just visit a new country. I thought America hit me quite a lot because it was always a place I wanted to go to. New York, wanted to go there, never planned on it, but ended up going there. It was that sort of thing where once you're there, you just see everything and it's just such a nice feeling. So that sort of thing hits you as well. So just those sort of videos I enjoy doing probably the most.
Yeah,
I watched a video of you in a hotel room, and I think it was Bournemouth. That was my favourite video you did, because you were just... And you do these away vlogs, and I think you'd been to a game down somewhere, and then I think it was the Southampton game in the cup quarter semi-final, and you were staying in like a hotel in Bournemouth, I think it was, and like the door handle didn't work, and like the toilet didn't flush or something, and I was like, this is absolute classic. Your travel videos are brilliant.
Yeah, well, I'll be bringing them back over for Australia. I'm starting to stop a little bit now because due to the fact you're going to the same team as the Premier League, because going to the same players. So I'm starting to restrict them now just to be for European travel vlogs and obviously pre-season, end of season vlogs. So they're the best ones when you go abroad and you see God knows what. So I think this plus, I want my Melbourne trip to be a good one. I don't want to spend a week and a half in a place that I don't like. But the UK ones have got quite bad standard hotels. Like, if you book a bad hotel in the UK, it will tend to be bad. Whereas, for example, if you go to a place like France or Germany, you book a bad hotel there, it will still be quite nice. So, you learn the hard way if you book a bad one in the UK. I've been some absolute shockers over the years, but I hope the Australia one's good. But I do tend to like making those videos as well. So, that's probably one of the reasons why people tend to enjoy them so much, because I just have a good time with them. It's just well, those sort of ones where it's like a preview for a match, but it's not at the same time. You just say, piss about it, do whatever you want, which is what I kind of like, but there's all the real restrictions there. But I will bring them back for Melbourne, so don't worry.
Yeah, lovely. What are you most looking forward to about coming to Australia, mate?
Well, just everything about it, really. Just being there, actually seeing Australia, just having the chance to speak to everyone, doing some things over there. I haven't exactly planned on what I want to do yet, but with Melbourne being right down at the coast, definitely want to do some work and just shoot out in the boat somewhere, do something like that. So just things like that. Obviously, I know this time of the year is not exactly going to be warm, but it will still be quite warm for me, even though I probably won't feel warm for you guys. So just enjoying some time out there. Obviously, the games are quite big. First one, of course, in the 100,000 seat stadium. Be definitely looking forward to doing that. Yeah. So I can't wait for that.
So I'm just looking at the weather now, mate. So we're probably it's cold for us. So this week's between 17 and 19. So we're kind of jumper and pants weather now. But for you, it's probably going to be a t-shirt and shorts kind of weather. So. Yeah.
19 degrees for me is like a nerdy summer's day. You know, I'll have shorts up for that. That is not
yeah, good. Absolutely. But before we wrap up, look, can't wait to catch up with you when you get here, mate, and then show you around Melbourne too. I mean, it is probably known as the sporting capital of the world, the amount of stuff we've got in the precinct around the MCG. Jack will strongly disagree because someone in Brisbane thinks they're two stadiums of the sporting capital of the world, but we've got 100,000 seat stadium. I think 3 km down the road is a 50,000 seat stadium with the A-League All-Stars game, which is on the Friday night as well. And then across from the MCG, we've got Amy Park, which plays our local domestic competition as well as rugby league, rugby union and all that. And then next to that as well is the tennis center where the Australian Open tennis is. This is all within about a kilometer of each other, mate. It's absolutely bonkers the way it's all set up and what they've done. So I can't wait for you to come down and see everything. And look, it's unreal. We can tell everyone about it and how good it is in Melbourne when it comes to sport. But thankfully for you, mate, you're going to see it in 2 weeks' time for yourself. So can't wait to welcome you to our country and hopefully catch up with you for the week that you're here as well. I've got the week off work, so I'll be kind of in and around Melbourne the whole time. So happy to be your tour guide, mate, for a day or two if you want to do anything. Jack's coming down from Brisbane, which is a 2-hour flight. So I think the biggest thing will probably blow you away is the size of Australia. So you could fly for 6 hours and you'll still be in Australia. Like, that's how big this joint is. So, yeah, can't wait. Absolutely stoked that you've jumped on, mate. And it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Jack, have you got anything before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, just to say thanks to Adam for jumping on. It's been good to talk to you. We obviously watch your videos and see on the socials and stuff. So really good to talk to you. You will have a great time when you're here. And yeah, like Keegan said, it'd be good to catch up. There's the Aussie Mags have got a few events lined up. So there's a few pubs and things that are set to be Newcastle pubs. And there's some stuff going on. I think the club might have a Q&A or something planned as well. So I'm sure you'll be across that. So yeah, I know it's a big opportunity for us here. That's why I asked you before about how you felt about when they announced that, because they're probably going to announce a Japan one as well. So you'll be in Japan in July as well.
No.
At least you're racking up the air miles.
Japan. Yeah. The good part this year being is the fact that the Euros are on, so it's going to delay the trip somewhat. So we'll probably be on all the time we'll actually go there. So that'll be handy. Just they go to Australia, have a couple of months back in the UK, and they go out again rather than kind of go out in and I'm out again. So that'll be good. I thought you finished off in a good way before, but I actually mentioned about the Aussie Mags and, of course, everything going on with regards to fan events out there. So obviously anyone that's watching the video now that's going to be at the games, I'll probably urge you to again contact, make sure you get yourself to the events and go your massive fan meet up. I'm quite intrigued to see how big Newcastle fan base is out there because I think it is going to be huge. I think there will be thousands there, which is a lot. The America, for example, is like only probably a few hundred you see in the pub, and at the time you look and go, whoa, this is so many people. But I think Australia is going to be massive. Like, it'll be by far the biggest following I think we've seen in any pre-season and this season tours. It'll be huge out there. So I'm looking forward to seeing how big it actually is, and I can't wait to get down there. So it's been an absolute pleasure to both of you. So thank you for having me on. It's been a great opportunity to get down there and meet so many different people and just enjoy a few events out there. So make sure if you are going to get in touch about it, and we'll all have a good time together.
Absolutely, mate. The pleasure's been all ours. I can't thank you enough for jumping on, mate. And hopefully we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, of course. See you there.
Cheers, thanks, Adam. Jack.
See you.